with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am so excited. It is March. And in a few weeks, we're going to be celebrating St. Patrick's Day, which is also the anniversary of Joy on Paper, the 8th anniversary. Ooh, wow. I can't believe it. The time has just flown by, and I'm so excited that we're going to be celebrating again here and right here in Tantalk Radio Studio. Oh, it's so wonderful. And right now, I get to welcome to Joy on Paper, Bill Larson. He is our legal eagle, and he answers all of my listeners' intellectual property questions. And boy, oh boy, do they have a lot of questions for you today, Bill. Hi, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Well, you know, Bill, things are changing so much in this crazy world. So my listeners are really fascinated by a lot of things. But just as I have, of course, on my webpage, I had your picture this morning. I said, you know, Bill's going to be in the studio. Well, not in the studio, you're on the phone today, but that you're going to be here to answer questions. And somebody texted me as I was driving, and they said, well, ask him about this case that's going on here in Florida. And I didn't know about it, and I don't know if you know about it, but apparently there's a case that was recently filed here, and it's about, it's a lawsuit by authors, a group of authors, I think 10 or 12 authors are suing because they're not getting any information about their royalties. And so they filed a lawsuit right here in Florida. And as a matter of fact, they even sent me the judge's name, Roy Bale Dalton. I don't know if you've ever...
No. I've not argued before him, no.
Okay, well, this is a problem. Apparently, they're complaining that their publisher, the person who, you know, deals with the publishing company, they just won't send any information in a timely fashion. And so, you know, they don't know if they have royalties coming. They don't know if royalties have been paid. And it's just a sort of a hassle to get straight answers. But that should be taken care of in a contract, right?
Yes, there should be a contract for royalties. Now, it's interesting that there's multiple plaintiffs and one defendant. It's probably because a single attorney agreed to represent them all at the same time to save on resources, you know, costs and expenses of litigation.
Yes.
And then they'll find out, the court will force the publisher or whoever they have a contract with to produce all of the financial records and to see if the royalties have been properly paid, or if they haven't been paid, where'd the money go?
Well, it looks like they did get together with some national writing group to file the lawsuit against predatory publishers. Yeah, it's not easy, and when you're an individual, you have even a more difficult time getting answers sometimes.
Yeah, it's all about how much money you have. So litigation is super expensive, but if you have the money, of course, like some of the really big wealthy authors do, they can file their own very expensive attorneys. But for the rest of us, it's financially not viable to file these types of lawsuits. It's just too expensive.
And it's funny. I mean, some of the publishers that I know people have complained about, they're big publishers. So you would think if you're with a major publisher that this wouldn't be a problem. They have accounting records. I mean, they keep good records. They count every book sold.
They do. So they'll have those records, and then they'll have to answer maybe the minimums weren't met and the royalties weren't paid, or they'll have an excuse for why the royalties weren't paid or they're not due. But that all comes out in what we call the discovery process of the litigation, where there's a back and forth between the plaintiffs and defendants, and they exchange information and documents, and then you have accountants and experts and stuff go over all the documents to see where the money went.
Well, you know, authors have so many things to struggle with. They really do. It's one thing after another. There are so many scams going on out there where authors are just inundated with schemes, how to get their books published somewhere else, how to get them translated, how to get them made into a film. So they're constantly being harassed. it's a difficult thing to navigate. A writer really has to be involved in so much. I would think that Tolstoy must have been a happy man compared to most writers, because all he had to deal with was his wife. And that's it. She did everything. She wrote it for him after he, got the initial one done, but she always put it in the final form, so he didn't have to deal with all of this.
And so the business side of the business is the toughest part. The authors write great works, and then you have to deal with getting into contracts with publishers, getting the sales going, collecting your money, and that requires a lot of times lawyers and accountants and other business experts to help you get your business really off the ground, and that can be expensive.
And things just happen sometimes. When you write a book, then somebody else comes along and steals it or claims that they have rights to it. So I was talking to one author, and I said to her something about really the importance. Now, when I was in Hollywood, when I was working, taking people's books and putting them into script form, I knew that the studios all had very, very deep and analysis of the chain of title, so that they didn't even waste their time on any product or any book or idea sometimes that they didn't have a chain to follow.
Right. So in the law, chain of title means that the ownership of property has been passed from one person to another. And there's two basic ways that can happen. One is a contract, where I basically sell you the work. And the other is the author passes away and the will or the trust transfers the title of the property to another person. And the chain of title is important. For example, if you were buying a house, you would hire a title company and they would do a search to make sure that there's clean title, right? Clean chain of title. A lot of times you'll find out you're going to buy a house and there's a lien where somebody else had owned the house and didn't sign off at some point or another. And that's what happens when we do searches for chain of title. In the case of copyright law, the chain of title is originally begins with the filing of a copyright application and then the registration issuing. Then, if the author wants to transfer it, they can. It's called an assignment, or they can leave it in their will to their heirs. But all of that has to be documented, because without those documents, the transfer is not enforceable. So the chain of title is broken.
It's a problem.
It has to be in writing.
Yeah.
It has to be in writing. Yeah, see, the assignment has to be in writing. If it's just a handshake deal, that's just not going to cut it. You're going to have something in writing. People forget to write it down, and then that breaks the chain of title, and then maybe somebody doesn't want to work with you because you don't have a clean chain of title.
And, of course, one of the things always is always to keep your files, too, so that if there is ever a claim against you, you have the files that you started with, your initial work, so that you have a tracking
Correct.
Back.
Yeah, it's almost like I tell all authors, keep a diary. So as you're going along and you're preparing your work, every day when you get done, write down what you did and sign and date it. That is the greatest proof. And judges and juries love that type of proof. This is also true for inventors. Tell my inventors, as you're inventing this thing, every day write down what you did, sign and date it, take pictures, whatever you need to do. Then one day when we have to enforce the patent, we can show that you actually built it because you have these diary notes of how you went through this long process to get to the end. So keeping notes and signing them and keeping these written records in a safe or some other secure area will also help with your chain of title and your ownership proof if you have to enforce.
And you never know. My little lawsuit in Hollywood, that the person who stole my work would had no chain of anything. I mean, that person had nothing and still got away with what happened. So, yeah,
You want proof of creation. You want proof of creation or inventorship, and you want proof of registration, which is done by filing an application or receiving the registration from the Copyright Office. You want to keep notes of everything you do in the terms of either a diary or a computer. You can do it digitally and save it. And then you want to make sure that you have either in your will or your trust that when you pass, your copyright registration goes to that particular person or persons. Or in the event you want to deal with somebody else and sell it, you got to make sure you have that in writing, because there's a law that says it has to be in writing.
Well, no, we talked about leaving your rights in a will. Now, of course, there is all this controversy now about publishers taking an author's work long after he's gone and changing his words. What they're doing now, for example, to Ian Fleming's books, the James Bond books, where they're going in and rewriting things. And what happens if you don't want them to do that kind of thing? If you put that in your will, is that binding on whoever you leave your rights to?
Yes. So whoever receives your rights through your either a trust, if you put your copyright in a trust, or if you say that it'll be devised in a will when you pass, then that other person gets the whole bundle of rights, including the right to bring a lawsuit for what you're describing is a derivative work.
And, well, is it a derivative work when a publisher takes a book and they only change a few words, like what they're doing either with Roald Dahl, where they change the word from being fat to enormous? Now, is that are they allowed to do that if the author didn't want them to do that?
No, because authors are entitled to the derivative works, which means that if you make any changes to the work, as you're describing, then those changes are seen to be insufficient to be a new work and a new authorship, original, and so it's considered a derivative work, and the original author owns all derivatives, so it would be considered an infringement, a copyright infringement.
But what is the obligation? So you give your books to your grandchildren, and they have now the rights to your book, but
yes.
Are you allowed to tell in your will that to your grandchildren they cannot agree ever to change the words in your book?
No, because once you sell something to somebody, you can't tell them what they can do with it. For instance, I can't sell you a car on a promise that you'll never paint it blue. All right, once you own it, you can do anything you want with it. So you can't put those kind of stipulations in contracts to assign or sell intellectual property.
So that's that. There won't be a lot of authors coming.
Once somebody owns it, they own it. You can't once you've sold it and you've gotten your money and they own that. You can't tell them what to do with it.
Well, I think there's going to be some authors who are going to be unhappy with that, because they don't want their words changed.
Yeah, that's the law. So if you don't want them to change the words, then don't give it to them.
Whoa, it's complicated. And now, of course, now on top of everything else, authors are faced with AI. And what is going to happen to books that are written by AI?
Yeah, it's a real question, and Congress is struggling with that right now because there's a real question of whether AI can be an author as described under the law. There's been a series of cases where people tried to get copyrights, like for elephants when they did paintings and a monkey that took a picture, and the court said, no, you got to be a human being to get a copyright. So can a computer create something, and then it's copyrightable? I don't think it's really been addressed yet, and that's something that the courts and the Congress are going to have to deal with.
Well, what do you think?
I think the law says you have to be a human being, so I'm not sure that AI, just based on the algorithms it uses, can qualify in and of itself as a copyright author, and that the work is original to the computer because it had to be programmed by somebody else. That's where I think the law will go.
I hope so. It's going to be complicated because by law, do they have to I understand, and I have not researched it, but I understand that Amazon is already putting books up that are written by AI.
I'm sure they are. You know, AI is moving very quickly. It's been all over the news, so I would not be surprised that the AI is 10 times further developed than any of us even understand.
And do they have to tell you? I mean, do they put a pseudonym, I guess a pseudonym, a pen name for an AI book if they put a name on it?
And that's the question. Yeah, that's the question because, you know, when you type something into a computer, the author's not the computer. It's you, the person that's doing the typing. So in order for the AI to be copyrightable, you would think that there would have to be a person involved. I mean, otherwise, is the AI computer going to call me on the phone and say, hey, can you copyright this for me? There has to be a human being to sign, right? This is going to be a digital signature. So it's a real head scratcher.
Because it is, because, I mean, it seems to me there'd have to be a warning on the book cover, like, this is written by AI. This is not a real person. I'm going to be in a real predicament as I get books in, you know, to recognize if a book is written by AI or if the name on the book is a real person.
Yeah, so an individual could go push in a few buttons and then crank out a novel. The AI does it all and then claim ownership as copyright. It's going to be a real problem to deal with in the future.
Well, I understand that in Hollywood, they are actually having AI write, and this is again, I think, terrible. Well, of course, so much of the writing in Hollywood is terrible, so I'm not sure if it's going to be worse. But they'll tell AI, they'll say, I want a scene with a character who does this or this, and the AI is writing the scene.
Right. So traditionally, if it was two human beings, and I told you to write the scene, you would be the copyright holder because you're the one that actually created the scene. The fact that I gave you the ideas does not make me a copyright holder. So that raises the question, if I give the idea to the computer, how can the computer be the copyright holder? And if the computer is a copyright holder, how does the computer bring a lawsuit for infringement?
I think you're going to have some interesting cases in the future, huh?
I got a headache already.
Just talking about it. Well, maybe what you'll have to do is start writing your own novels. Then we'll know that they're not AI.
One of the really interesting cases right now that everybody might look for is the Jack Daniels case, which is going to the Supreme Court over the issue of parody, which we've talked to many times on this show. And parody is a form of free speech. So it says that even though you kind of copied or created a derivative work either on somebody's art or their music or their words, you are not an infringer. And so this one company made this plush toy for dogs, like a dog toy, and it's a parody of the Jack Daniels bottle, and Jack Daniels is suing this company, and it got all messed up in the Ninth Circuit out in California. It's kind of a crazy appeals opinion out there, and so the Supreme Court has picked it up, and that's going to be very interesting to watch that case.
So it's a toy?
It's a dog toy, yeah. It's like, you know, the thing you throw for your dog to play with. And it's kind of a cute parody. I mean, it is a parody, but then the question becomes, when is it no longer a parody but actually an infringement for the purpose of commercialization, you know, making a lot of money? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised the Supreme Court picked it up because the law parody is pretty well set. I think they want to send a shot across the bow to the Ninth Circuit, is what I suspect.
Well, I guess Jack Daniels doesn't want dogs chewing up their bottles.
Yeah, they say it dilutes the distinctiveness of their bottle. I mean, everybody knows, even if you don't drink, when somebody puts a bottle of Jack Daniels down on the table, you know that. I mean, you're like, that's Jack Daniels. And so if anybody wants to check it out, just go on Google and type in Jack Daniels parody lawsuit, and you'll get all the information. So, of course, I'm very interested to see how the justices rule on this case.
Oh, that'll be interesting case to listen to.
Yeah.
Because we can
as an attorney, I'm betting on Jack Daniels.
Yeah, I think so. It seems
based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I don't think it's right to chew up a Jack Daniels. If you want Jack Daniels,
you know, it's a gray area, but it's too close to the line. So I think that Jack Daniels is going to prevail, just because, although it is a parody, it really falls more on the commercialization side rather than pure parody. Remember, we talked about the books and the Cat in the Hat and some of that stuff that was parodied. Those were clearly to make a point, and that's why it's free speech when you use parody. Two Live Crew, remember, in the Pretty Woman case with the Supreme Court. Those were, you know, were clear parodies because they were trying to strike a point. But in this case, it looks like they just made a toy, so I'm skeptical that they'll prevail. But one never knows.
It will be an interesting case to listen to.
Definitely.
Because we still have to listen to cases, which I think is good. I don't like the idea of cameras in the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
you have to do is just listen to the transcripts.
They
tape them.
Yeah, I like listening to them. I think that's nice. And I like to imagine what their faces look like.
Yeah, they're going through a bunch of really great cases right now. You know, for instance, the other one is the student loan forgiveness. It looks like that one's going down in flames. The executive exceeded their authority to discharge all of those loans, student loans. That one's on the chopping block.
Yeah.
A lot of great cases going through the Supreme Court right now, and this parody case is one particularly interesting to me since it's an intellectual property case.
Well, you know, Tuesday, I had on the program, I had two great authors, both of them lawyers. One was Steve Barry, and he was a lawyer for 30 years, and also a politician in Georgia. And he, of course, now he writes these fantastic, fantastic books. They're called the Cotton Malone series. And, of course, he uses partly the knowledge he's gained from being a lawyer for 30 years. So when can we expect a novel from you?
Oh, I don't think ever. I think you'll probably catch me on a fishing boat offshore before I start writing books.
Well, you never know, because, you know, that's one of the things. I have had so many authors who are lawyers, and it does give you it's a good training ground for solid writing, and then if you have a little imagination, you throw that in, and next thing you know.
Hemingway wrote on his boat.
That's right.
Took a typewriter with him.
Exactly.
Wrote some of his best novels when he was down there in Key West, patrolling for Marlin.
Yeah. So, you know, you can get one of those nice non-electric typewriters and sit there and type, because I know you do like to be out there on your boat. And we're so lucky the weather is good again.
Yes.
Well, again, Bill, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Pleasure.
And I just want to tell everyone that they can contact you at Larson & Larson. And I think a few authors that I know are going to be contacting you soon, because now that the pandemic is over and people are actually, you know, able to think about going out, I think that and they're trying to find new ways to reach an audience. So again, thank you, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. You have three offices now. My goodness gracious, you've expanded since you started here on Joy on Paper.
Yeah, I'm through the center of Florida, so here in Largo, Clearwater, Tampa, and Orlando.
That's fantastic. Anyway, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Bill. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was great. We're going to do a book buzz from Devon Miller, and then some commercials, and then I've got a real treat. I've got Liz Malone. She is a publicist, and she's going to be talking about, well, the authors she represents and maybe a little bit of her work. Okay.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. A lively celebration of friendship and music is here for readers to enjoy. The Animal Song, written and illustrated by Jaunty Howley, is here! A crocodile, a big brown bear, and a weasel form a traveling band and play for the other animals in the woods. But when winter comes, the animals in the woods head to bed, leaving the traveling band to find a new audience to hear their sound. Jaunty first sketched the main characters back in 2019. While waiting to hear if his story would get published, he made models of the characters from the story to calm his nerves. Having a lot of fun making them, the book eventually got published. While being a story, the animal song is also, well, a song, with original music composed by the author and illustrator himself, Jaunty Howley. Perhaps when you read the animal song, maybe you'll also sing along. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Liz Malone, because she is a publicist, and she needs publicity, and she wants to give some of her author's publicity. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, it's so nice to have you on the program, because it's funny, you know, last week when Jerome Preisler was on, and he gave you a shout-out, which is funny, because as I mentioned to him, and I think later on to you, very, very seldom, as a matter of fact, I think the first one, that an author actually shouts out to his publicist. So I thought, well, that is so cool. First of all, it shows what a wonderful guy Jerome is. He is so, so fantastic. And I thought it was so cute the way that he wanted, at the end of the program, he asked permission to say something. he's just adorable. Ever since I met him at BouchaCon in Dallas, I thought he was so adorable. And I just love, I love how he talks, and I love his books, of course. And so he gave you a shout out. So no, I had this opportunity to invite you here for a little while so we could talk. So, Liz, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and there's just so much happening in my sphere right now with my authors, and I will first tell you, Patsy, it is very unfamiliar territory for a publicist to be coming out into the forefront, because we are so equipped to being behind the curtain and operating in that fashion, but I would never pass up an opportunity to talk about my incredible writers that I work with.
Well, that's what I figured. I mean, that's what you're here for, and that's your mission in life, to get out there and promote these authors, and you have some fantastic ones in addition to Jerome.
Yeah, so in addition to Jerome, and you know that his book, Net Force Moving Target, is available now everywhere books are sold. But I would love to talk about Stephen Hartove, and he is certainly a familiar name for you. And his current release is The Last of the Seven, which is a World War II thriller, and it is a very touching story, emotional story, aside from just being another example of his literary masterfulness. But it really talks about the little-known X-Troop, and it is a story inspired by that. And aside from Stephen's amazing writing, I would love to just tell a story, if you don't mind, that Stephen is responsible for getting me into the PR world in books. And you just never know where life will take you, and sometimes these chance meetings can really redirect your life in ways you would never imagine. And so I always credit Stephen as being the seed for Liz Malone LLC.
Well, that's so wonderful, because, of course, as you know, I love his books. He writes the kind of books I love. As he says, he doesn't write war stories. He writes stories about people who are in places where there is a war. And that's, mm-hmm. His books make the stories come alive. And I'm going to have him on the program, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Soul of a Thief, which is a fantastic book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, one thing that people don't know about these authors sometimes, because you become very familiar with their work, is that they are just amazing human beings. It takes a really imaginative and interesting person to create these stories. That it's a real craft. And I think that both Jerome and Stephen are wonderful examples of how it takes a very imaginative person and a very skilled writer to bring such amazing stories to life.
Now, as you said, you have some other authors, and at least two of them I know are going to be coming up on Joy on Paper.
Yeah, so I do have a couple interesting authors that I would love to just mention. So one of my newer authors that I'm working with, his name is Matt Scott, and he has a book coming out. It's actually just in a few weeks, which is, time just goes by too fast. It's so March 21st, his book three of the Surviving the Lion's Den series. It's called The Ayatollah Takedown, and this is a very interesting thriller series. It is a political thriller. He was inspired to write this because he, in his studies, really became fascinated with Iran and wanted to write something that was sort of in the vein of the Da Vinci Code and have it really bring some of the aspects of Iran and politics to a new level. And so that's his thriller series that's going to be coming out later on this month. And, you know, we definitely look forward to getting him on your show, and he can really talk about it in much more detail.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to him because, of course, I mentioned to you that I lived in Iran. So mm-hmm. I am very interested in all the stories that are set in Iran. It's going to be lots of fun. His first book, which was Surviving the Lion's Den, is fantastic. And I'm so happy that he's going to be here. I'm going to actually give him a whole hour because I can talk about Iran for a whole hour. And it's funny, as people sometimes, when I was living there, I would write back to my family. I'd say, you know, it's really cold. It's really cold here in Tehran. I'm freezing. And people didn't realize that, you know, Americans don't always understand where all the countries are. But we used to have terribly cold winters in Tehran. So, yeah, so it's going to be fun to talk to him.
Yeah, and he has some really interesting anecdotes about how he got into the industry of writing. And I certainly don't want to take away from any of his thunder, but I think you're really going to enjoy talking to him and hearing some of his stories about how he became a writer. So, yeah, I think I think what's very interesting about the thriller genre is that I have learned so much about books and genres as I've become more and more immersed in doing this work, is that how fragmented and how the genre has really expanded. And it's just the only thing that's kind of holding it back is just imagination, and it's just so vast. And each and every day, I'm, especially in the writing community on Twitter, I'm just amazed by all of these new adventures and stories that people are coming up with.
Well, Matt is definitely my kind of writer, and his books are fantastic. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. And then I think you have a few others that you want me to talk to.
Yeah, so I have Miranda Armstadt. She has a book that is out right now. It's an independently published book. It's called Cut Back to Life. And it's a romance suspense genre book. What's interesting about her writing of this book is that she writes a romance story that has characters that are not in their 20s and 30s, but in their, you know, late 50s and 60s. And so it's really a boomer love story. And you don't really hear about stories like that because they, you know, you seem to think that when you're become a senior citizen that, you know, you don't have relationships anymore and you don't have romantic feelings anymore, and which obviously is not the case. So it's really great that she touched upon a love story that hit that demographic. And so she's currently working on a historical fiction two-part series, which is very exciting. I certainly can't give too much away about it, but she's really got some amazing things that she's probably going to have published by the end of the year. And then I have Melody Kelly, and she is a former elementary school teacher, and she has a book that she's written called Teaching from the Heart, and it is very much a love letter to the profession that she really embraced with all of her heart. And what she really focuses on in her book is the importance of relationship in the teaching process. And it is a book that is really geared for people who are thinking about being in the education field, for parents to understand that parent-teacher and the teacher-student relationship. And she's currently working on a second edition of her children's series, which features a main character named Lulu, who gets in all of these little mysterious adventures. And I think of it as like your first cozy mystery for children.
Well, it sounds fascinating, and I'm looking forward to talking to her. And again, it's just so wonderful that you have really gotten such praise from the authors that you're working with. I think that's a remarkable sign. And as I said, it doesn't happen very often that an author will even mention their agent, let alone their publicist. I do remember, now some authors will mention their editor. Mary Higgins Clark would always come on and talk about Michael Korda, who was her editor and very good friend, you know, when she started in the business, and she would always talk about him. But I think it's just wonderful, and so I'm glad that I was able to give you some time today to come on and tell people how they can connect with you.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. And if anybody wants to learn more, they can visit me on my website, and it's just lismalone.com. It's LISMALONE.com. And would love to hear from you.
Yeah, that's good. Good that you spelt it, because LIS is not a usual name, which is a good reason to put it, because then when people search, they can find it. So LIS and Liz Malone, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I think you're a joy, and I look forward to talking to you and to your clients. It's always fun to hear that word, isn't it? I have clients. I have clients. It's a wonderful thing to have. So, and I'm sure it's going to be an expanding list of clients, and we're going to help you get that. Okay?
Oh, thank you, Patsy, as always, and we love what you do with the show.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye now, Liz. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, isn't that sweet? I thought that was so sweet of Jerome Preisler to just to compliment her, because it doesn't happen. And that always reminds me, of course, of just thinking of Mary Higgins Clark. You know, oh, she was so wonderful, and she was so wonderful to me, and I think I was one of the few people that she actually had her personal, I do have a few authors, very famous authors, I have their personal cell numbers, but of course, Mary Higgins called me because she had forgotten she was on the air and was telling me stuff she didn't want to tell the world. So it was fun when she called me and said, can you not put that on the... She was absolutely delightful. A very, very wonderful woman. And I want to just mention, Devon Miller did this book buzz for The Animal Song, which is written by Jonty Howley. And I'm going to invite Jonty onto the program so that... we can actually hear his music that inspired this book. And the book is called The Animal Song. It's an absolutely adorable picture book for children. It's just cute. The drawings are cute. The story is cute. And Jonty Howell is just somebody who celebrates love and friendship and music. And when we get him on the program, we will be able to actually hear his song, because I'm excited about that. And as he likes to write, this is a perfect, perfect, gentle nighttime story read. And I do want, again, as I always do whenever I talk about children's books, to remind you that if you don't have a child in your life, please get this book. Just go online, order it, and send it to a children's hospital near you, or to St. Jude's, or, you know, any really hospital where you think that there are kids, and they will love this book. They will just go crazy for it. It's a delightful book, and children in hospitals need books. And that's something that Devon Miller learned, because when he was a child, he spent a lot of time in a hospital. And I, again, want to thank Devon so much for joining me here on Joy on Paper to do these book buzzes for children. And now I have been turning his book buzzes into little videos, which are on my Facebook page, which is Radio Joy on Paper. You can go there. I've already done two of them. And it's just a way to remind you to get these books for your children. If you have... For me, I started reading because my mother read to us every single night. Our entire childhood was spent, we would spend sitting there on her lap and then eventually crawling into bed. But we would sit there and she would read to us night after night after night. And that's how I learned how to read. I learned how to read by the time I was two, simply because I'd run my finger over the words that she was reading. And reading for children is so important. And I want to, again, Devon Miller is such an amazing young man. He's still in school, but he's he has big plans for the future. He writes a series of children's book himself, Mr. Tickety Talk Clock books, and they're all delightful. One of my favorite is The Magic Library. So you can go to Amazon and order his books and also send them to a hospital because they're delightful books. There's I think there's 5 books in the series now, and it's about, and I love this because I thought about it and I thought about it. Why, oh why, when I was in school, I did spend a lot of time looking at the clock. and I never thought, and I was never clever enough to write a book about the clock turning into Mr. Tickety Talk Clock, which is what Devon did. I looked at that clock and I don't know. I think one time, and this is disgusting. I hate to say this because it's something I thought was horrible at the time. But there was a boy in our class who did those, what do you call those, spitballs. And I know he did a spitball at the clock. And at the time, I thought it was gross, but in retrospect, because I was always looking at the clock, because for me, the classes were boring. I had already read the books. I read the books for the entire semester every year. I would get the books just before school started, and by the first day of school, I'd already read all the books. I couldn't. What could I do? I had to sit there looking at the clock. And now I look back and I think, oh, Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. Oh, why didn't I think of that? But Devon did, and he's written the series, and I think he's going to turn it into something. And one day I hope to see a cartoon called Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. Cartoons. They would be fun because Devon Miller has a lot of love in his heart and a lot of joy in his heart. And when he came in here, the first time he came in here to promote his book, he had been speaking for maybe 5 minutes, and I said to myself, oh my goodness, I need Devon Miller in my life because he's so full of joy, so full of love. And I just want to, again, really, I want to give a shout out to his parents because his parents have raised an absolutely amazing young man, and he is so delightful. And so, you know, we've been doing this now for over 2 years. He's been doing these wonderful book buzzes, and do check periodically on my Facebook page, and you'll see I'm going to now turn them all into little mini stories so that you can learn about wonderful, wonderful recommendations. And he's got a great eye. He understands children's books, and he knows what kids will like. So you can really find some wonderful books when you go to my website. Now, one of the things, my second guest today was supposed to be Alicia Fernandez Miranda. And I was so happy that Liz Malone stepped in today to help me and to talk about her authors. But I wanted to talk to Alicia today, and I will get her. She's somewhere in transit. Again, another one of these weather problems. You know, I don't know. She was on her way from Scotland to Scotland. I don't know where she's going, but it is absolutely a delightful book. It's called My What If Year, and it's by Alicia Fernandez Miranda. Now, I don't know when I'll get her to come back, to, you know, so that she'll come on the program. But what I love about this book is she took a year from a very important job as a CEO. She decided to take a year off and try the jobs that she had dreamt about trying when she was young. And she didn't do it. She went instead into business and worked her way up the ladder and became a CEO. And then one day she thought, well, what if I had done this? And so she went ahead, and she just brave enough and successful enough, she had enough money, she could do it. She could take that year, and her husband said, okay, and her twin said, okay, Mama, I guess if you want to do this and you want to get some jobs to see what it would have been like if you had taken those jobs. Now, she writes a very funny book. She's turned it into a real comedy. It's really delightful. She became a gopher for a Broadway Productions. So there she is working backstage in Broadway. And all of these jobs, she had to talk her way into it because she's no spring chicken. So she was taking intern jobs wherever she could get an intern job. And usually they don't give them to people over, 20 actually. So she had to just chat her way in and get these jobs. And she had lots of fun, learned lots of things, and turned it into a book, including one of her jobs was working in a very posh hotel in Scotland, which is interesting because, I love Scotland. And it's funny. All this month, I kept getting calls or books or information from people who were in Scotland, wrote about Scotland, including Tasha Alexander, whose new Lady Emily book is set in Scotland. And that's so exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. But the name of this book is My What If Year. Go ahead and get it. It's very funny. And we need some funny books because I don't think, I could write this book. That's what I'm going to have to watch for, but I don't think an AI could write this book. One of the things she actually, she's working in the restaurant and she catches her shirt on fire in the restaurant, which can happen, if you're carrying a shish kebab, you never know. So it's a really funny book and I really am, I think it's delightful. And it's an idea for all of you. If you're a writer and you don't know what to write next, take a part-time job in some business that you've never been in. And oh boy, you learn so much. It's so much fun. If you haven't been a dishwasher, become a dishwasher. You learn a lot. If you haven't, maybe work at Dunkin' Donuts and hand out donuts. Whatever. Find something. And if you can find a job backstage of a stage production, wow, now that's fun. It's always fun to be there. And it's sort of like if you can, in Hollywood, people always try to get on a set and become a gopher and do something where they can actually get on the set. In the old days, it was wonderful because they used to have this wonderful, they just have these beautiful spreads of food. And everybody could just attack them. Oh, it was wonderful. Anyway, I have to say goodbye because, my goodness, time's running out. Anyway, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know. And I am hoping that will happen for Carol J. Perry, because I want to see Witch City Mysteries and Aunt Ibby. Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful on screen? And then meanwhile, everybody, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Hey, Big Ed, what do you think about this, making the bases larger in baseball? What do you think about that? Huh?
Anything but the salaries.
Okay. I'm disgusted. It makes me sick. I don't want them to be in bigger bases. My goodness. What's wrong with these people? Anyway, bye-bye now. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Thanks for joining us. We begin today with good news and bad news. The good news, the calendar tells us spring officially arrives in about 3 weeks. The bad news, the chief meteorologist at the Canadian Weather Network says several more rounds of wintry weather are expected this month into April. One of them, a system bringing a lot of snow from the U.S. Midwest, is expected to arrive here in southern Ontario late tomorrow afternoon. Then they say it's going to track east into Quebec on Saturday. More snow is in the forecast for the BC southern mainland and parts of Vancouver Island, but spring-like Chinook conditions are moving into the prairies. In the